Welcome everyone to a Baseball America podcast, along with Aaron Fitt. I'm John Manuel. I'm joining you from the worldwide headquarters here in Durham, where all is calm after the storm. Aaron, what's the weather like out in SoCal?
A little bit gray as usual in the morning, and tends to clear up in the afternoon around here. So I think we're approaching May gray, they call it.
Oh, really? Does that have anything to do with the with smog, or is that just the clouds and the rainy season?
Even rain, it's just every morning, I guess it's in May, it gets gray and then it clears up. I think it has something to do with some geographic phenomenon with Catalina Island and the mountains or some such nonsense. I don't know.
I think that is nonsense. I think it's some such nonsense. But we're going to talk about nothing that's nonsensical today on the Baseball America podcast, only a college baseball fact, and try to separate some of our college baseball fact from fiction. But another entertaining week as the season is now 9 weeks old, Aaron. And we have a new number one this week, and we have a new number three team that's rocketing up the charts. A very familiar face coming back into the poll at the back of the rankings. Let's start right up at the top, where our number one team last week, Vanderbilt, goes on the road for four games. A pretty nice week of games for Middle Tennessee State, by the way. I don't think we talked about that, but they played four ranked teams this week in Vanderbilt and Troy, and there are a lot of zeros on the board. But Vanderbilt goes on the road at South Carolina and loses that series, first series loss of the year for the Commodores. So South Carolina, Aaron, has one series against two number one teams this year. Now we're going to have to research that and find out the last time that happened. But they've won series against both Florida and Vanderbilt, and yet South Carolina is not number one in our rankings. It's Virginia this week that ascends to the number one spot, and that was a very contentious number one debate.
Yeah, it was, a lot of strong feelings on both sides. I actually sent out a couple of tweets last night asking who people thought should be number one, and it was, it was as divided as you'd expect. I mean, there's probably more South Carolina fans who are vocal, who follow me on Twitter, than Virginia fans, because I heard a lot from the Gamecock fans who thought it was pretty simple. You beat number one twice, you should be number one. It's not that simple. These teams both have great resumes. South Carolina having one series against Florida and Vanderbilt, impressive. You cannot, for me, you can't downplay that, and I think that trumps Virginia's best series, which are two out of three, and then home against Florida State, two out of three.
Now, Aaron, we just lost you.
But those are both really quality series too.
Lost you a little bit there for the with the gray. So say that point again about South Carolina's top two series compared to Virginia's.
I think it trumps Virginia's top two series at Georgia Tech and versus Florida State at home. But those are both two quality series also. They're not teams to scoff at by any means. And Virginia, you have to look at their body of work. They are 36-3. That's a 923 winning percentage compared to South Carolina's 800 winning percentage. Now, is the SEC better than the ACC? Yes, I think it is. It's deeper. For sure, but South Carolina's schedule as a whole isn't really more impressive than Virginia's. I mean, Virginia, they both played Clemson. Virginia swept three at Clemson, and South Carolina took two out of three at three different sites against Clemson. I mean, South Carolina has losses here and there against teams like Cal State Bakersfield and the Citadel, and I mean, Virginia just hasn't had any hiccups. They had to be rewarded, and one point that I thought you made in our meeting that was kind of persuasive to me is this. Is it more impressive to win 36 out of 39 games against Virginia's schedule, or to go 4-2 against Florida and Vanderbilt, two comparable teams to South Carolina, and be 27-8 overall. I mean, I think it's close, but
right.
we ended up, the team that went 5-0 last week didn't get jumped by the team that went 2-2 last week, even though it was a very good 2-2 week.
Yeah, I think South Carolina would have been number one if it had swept that Vanderbilt series, and maybe that's setting the bar too high. That's not, but these things just don't happen in a vacuum, and that's what, fans, when you ask them who you think should be ranked, which we also did on Facebook, I'm sure we could do on Twitter at Baseball America, as you did at Aaron Fitt. I think that they, it's very easy to just look at this week, and there's sometimes where I think when you're doing the rankings, when we were doing the rankings, Aaron, sometimes it's very difficult to not get just caught up in what just happened and to try to look at the whole body of work. I think the further away you get from number one, the more you kind of ride the hot hand. But at number one, when you're talking about this, we try to look at the whole body of work. Because what happened this week, there's no way you would jump South Carolina over Virginia, in my opinion. You're not jumping them over for, like you said, going 2-2, no matter who the 2-2 is going against. You know, you just don't jump 2-2 usually over a team that went 5-0 and swept the conference series, although albeit a series where they should have swept Duke. But, I mean, to me, Virginia, like you said, they have no hiccups. And I think in baseball, it's just very, very difficult to go 36-3 no matter who you're playing. And they've played a pretty good schedule. And, you know, loss is a loss, but their three losses are by a combined 4 runs. They're all on Sundays. There really has been nothing that Virginia has done poorly all season long. And there's very little that South Carolina has done poorly, but I would be proud to have South Carolina as our number one team. I'm just as proud to have Virginia as our number one team, and I think South Carolina is the best number two team we've had in a long time. And it'll be fun to do that research and try to find the last time any team won two series against top-ranked teams, because I really can't remember that happening. I think you look at the entire body of work, and there's just not a lot separating these two clubs. And Virginia was ahead going into the week. I don't think poll mechanics are the answer necessarily for why Virginia's number one. I think 36-3 is really more the answer. And it's not just 36-3, it's 7-2 against top 25 teams. And it's just they've dominated, 11 shutouts. It's a very resounding 36-3 season. So South Carolina, probably the best number two team we've ever had. At least not ever, but the best number two team I can remember in midseason, the best resume for a number two team.
Right.
And then you're talking about Oregon State at number three, Aaron. I don't think Oregon State's resume is a whole lot different from South Carolina's. They don't have those signature series of the teams they beat having been number one at the time. But Oregon State is red hot. And then going on the road to Stanford, which we dropped out of the rankings, Stanford had been 17th, a very difficult team to assess in terms of they've played a lot of tough series, Aaron. But Stanford came into the weekend 3-3 out of their 6 weekend series. And now you have Oregon State going into Stanford and sweeping the series. I don't think any of us was prepared necessarily or expecting that to happen, but the Beavers are really on fire and doing it despite the loss of Andrew Susak, their midseason All-America catcher, if I can use that nomenclature.
Yeah, I mean, it's so impressive to me. what can you say to sweep Arizona State and Stanford back-to-back without – your best offensive player. I wasn't sure how Oregon State was going to respond to the loss of Susak. And, you know, even in last week's mailbag question, I kind of tackled that question of who's the team to beat in the Pac-10 now. And it looked like it set up very well for Oregon State schedule-wise because they were 5-1, having already played two of the stronger teams in the league, Arizona on the road and then Arizona State. In the first series, Arizona State was without Susak. And they swept it anyway, but I thought long term, I don't know. I mean, can they sustain this? Right. He's their best player. You know, he's their biggest power threat by far. It's like you take Jackie Bradley Jr. or Christian Walker out of the South Carolina lineup. Except, you know, if you take one of those guys out, you still have the other guy. You know, Oregon State doesn't really have another All America caliber player in that lineup.
Right.
So anyway, it's very impressive. I mean. You know, they just – I was talking with a scout this weekend, John, about Oregon State, and he wasn't surprised by their success. And he actually said that he thinks Pat Casey is the best coach on the West Coast, which he certainly has a case for. You know, he's on the short list, and he might be the best coach. But he's the way this team plays so hard and has not quit at all, without Susak. I mean, they just kept on rolling. Way they've put their pitching together. I mean, they haven't had Adam Duke. He might be the best arm on the staff, the freshman. He's been hurt all year, you know, and that hasn't slowed him down either.
It's amazing.
It is amazing. And there's nothing cheap about what they've done. I mean, those last 3 weeks are you're talking about resounding? That's resounding.
And you've written about Sam Caviglio. He was in the Golden Spike spotlight that we do in conjunction with USA Baseball as part of your weekly Three Strikes column that's on Monday's College blog. So we know they have a legit Friday guy, an experienced guy. He doesn't have maybe big-time pro stuff, but he's a very good college pitcher. We've written about Josh Osich because he's a big draft guy, a power left-hander, the Idaho kid, redshirt junior, Tommy John, coming off that. There are other names that we recognize and we've talked about, but their bullpen, Aaron, just seems so deep. With Matt Boyd, who's been outstanding, but now this weekend you have Tony Bryant, Twins draftee, 6'7" sophomore, getting a couple of saves on Friday and Sunday. So they don't just have one guy like they had a couple years ago where Kevin Roderick was expected to be their closer, or in their championship years where it was Kevin Gunderson, or now, you know, big league Rule 5 guy like Joe Patterson, Daniel Turpin. Some of their bullpen has just wave after wave of guys. Can you tell us a little bit about Matt Boyd and Tony Bryant and what makes this Oregon State bullpen so good?
You know, Bryant was really a big-time guy a couple of years ago. I think I was a junior in high school, if I recall. And, you know, if I'm remembering correctly, he was hurt or something as a senior, and he just kind of fell off a little bit. But now he's back, and he's making an impact. I mean, you know, you said it. He's a 6'7" guy. He's a tough angle, and he attacks hitters. He's having a great year back there. And Matt Boyd, you know, that's the thing about this unit is they – you know, they've got a lot of different looks. I mean, Boyd is a tough left-hander, a lot of funk, you know, and Ben Wetzler's kind of similar. He's a strike-throwing lefty. Both those guys came up big this weekend in the bullpen, you know, and they haven't had Taylor Starr. I mean, that's another guy, you know, who's got a really, really good arm, who's made one appearance this year.
That's crazy.
Wait till they get the full strength. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
It really is impressive, and so I'm going to guess that now while UCLA did – you know, you got a chance to see UCLA this weekend. You saw Trevor Bauer pitch very well. While UCLA was your pick last week in the Pac-10, are you switching that pick to the Beavs now? I'm going to guess you are.
I think you have to at this point. You know, they're 8-1 in the league, and they still have the easiest teams, I mean, left to play. You know, they still have Washington. They still have USC, which clearly is not a pushover at this point, we can say. I mean, they've won back-to-back series now. I've seen USC each of the last two Fridays, and they've gotten beaten by Stanford and Oregon, and then they've come back to win the next two games. So, but still, it's a team that Oregon State should beat. You know, I mean, I think the schedule opens up for them. I do still like UCLA. I still like Arizona State. I mean, Cal. I mean, any one of those four teams for me. I think those four teams it's still a pretty open race, you know, but it's a good group of four teams.
No doubt about it. It's the Baseball America podcast with John Manuel and Aaron Fitt. Aaron's the guy dropping the knowledge. I'm just the guy trying to keep the train moving along. Aaron, the other, you know, Vanderbilt and Florida slot back in after the Beavs in our top, you know, at 4 and 5. I guess the other story kind of in our top 10 from last week was North Carolina, switching gears a little bit to the ACC. But the Tar Heels have been red hot, 30-5, off to the best start and tied for the best start in school history. And now they go after a big midweek win against East Carolina, kind of a rivalry game, a game that East Carolina takes very seriously. Tar Heels go to NC State, which had lost 4 straight games, 18-16 overall. And NC State owns the Tar Heels. 2 close wins on Friday and Saturday. And Saturday's game, kind of a surreal affair because the game was scheduled for 6:30, and they started on time after tornadoes sweep through the Raleigh area. And, you know, in downtown Raleigh, it was kind of devastated. There's a lot of, you know, places in downtown Raleigh that aren't going to have power for 3 or 4 days. Shaw University, a Division II school there, has canceled the rest of its semester of school because of power issues and the damage on their campus. But NC State and North Carolina still get the game in. And, you know, NC State clinches the series on Saturday with another hard-fought victory, and then just blows North Carolina out on Sunday when the Tar Heels have been struggling pitching-wise. So what does this say for the ACC? Does this almost make Virginia stand out even a little bit more from the ACC crowd? And did NC State just win its way back into the regional conversation?
They're back into the regional conversation for sure. Because last week, you know, as we broke down in stock report, I thought they were kind of dead in the water. I mean, they weren't close to having a regional resume last week, and now, you know, like you said, they're back in the conversation. They still have work to do, but boy, that's a big sweep for NC State, and it's pretty stunning for North Carolina. You know, I mean, a team that had been like you said, 30-5. They didn't have an immediate hangover after Florida State. They came back on Tuesday and beat East Carolina, you know, tough East Carolina team in midweek game, and then this weekend you lose 2-1-1 games, and then you don't compete on Sunday. I mean, they just got blown out of the water on Sunday, 10-2. It's surprising. I think they need to, you know, reevaluate some things. I don't know. I mean, how seriously can you take this for a team that had been so consistent all year long?
Go ahead.
I just think it's a tough team to figure out. You know, I mean, they all year long they played maybe above what we expected from them, certainly. Are they coming back to earth, or is this just a speed bump?
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. I think they played a little bit over their heads all year, and I think what you're seeing right now is that the biggest question I think we had about North Carolina was its starting pitching. Certainly, we had some questions about their offense after losing Brian Goodwin, but their starting pitching has just been at such a high level the last few years, and the fact they didn't have a stud at the front of that rotation, I think, was a big question mark. And now this weekend you had Patrick Johnson, who'd been so good on Fridays for them, not get out of the fifth inning. He gets the loss on Friday. Then you had the freshman Kent Emanuel, who's been very good, but was better midweek. It's been a little bit more of a grind for him in conference. He didn't get out of the second inning on Saturday, and Sunday it's been a puzzle for them all year. North Carolina State, I seem to remember that in the preseason, trying to argue that I thought that NC State would be better than North Carolina this year.
And I think you did.
And I've certainly been proven wrong on that all year long. I don't know if NC State can sustain it. It'll be interesting if they finally give the senior Rob Chamra, who's a Temple transfer. He's been pretty good for them for 2 years. They don't seem like they want to have him pitch important games. He started Sunday and got the win. He's 5-0 now. But NC State seems like it's figuring out some things pitching-wise. I do think NC State can rally and make regionals. I still also think, though, that North Carolina, even with this sweep, Aaron, can still be even a top eight national seed because the rest of the schedule lines up okay for them. But the next weekend is huge for them. I'm going to stay in the ACC for a minute because North Carolina plays Miami next weekend. We did not really have a great option, I don't believe, in our top 25 for number 25. We wound up ranking the Miami Hurricanes, who are 13-4 in the ACC, back in our ranking, the preseason number 18, I believe. Miami has not fared well against top 25 teams, Aaron. Hasn't fared well against great teams, but they're beating the bad teams. And at 24-12, 13-4 in the ACC, they come back into the rankings. Miami's at North Carolina next weekend. Does North Carolina being a little bit cold give Miami a shot to steal that series on the road, or do you think North Carolina is the prohibitive favorite there?
I think North Carolina is the favorite. I mean, I don't know that it's prohibitive. I think those teams are pretty comparable. You know, I mean, I think North Carolina certainly is a better offensive team. That's borne itself out at this point. I think they're pretty comparable pitching wise. Somebody's trying to get in touch with me here. I apologize for the
delay. That's okay.
North Carolina is pretty comparable pitching wise with Miami. I think neither of these rotations has a shutdown. Like you said, they don't have a Matt Harvey or an Alex White. You know, a big time arm. I think Miami can pitch with North Carolina. The question is, can they hit? I expect North Carolina to win that series at home, but I don't think it's a gimme by any means.
I don't think it's a surprise that Miami has a command and control left-hander who's there at the front of the rotation right now.
Yeah.
Brian, or is it Radzewski? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Radzewski? I'm not quite sure.
I'm not quite sure either. We don't want to butcher the young man's name, but he's been consistent for them. He's now taken over the Friday role. It's like inheriting the mantle of Chris Hernandez, Eric Erickson, obviously J.D. Arteaga. That's what J.D. did. Now he's the pitching coach there. And, of course, they have, as I want to say on the podcast, they like their power arms out of the bullpen. I like that the Sunday matchup in that series wound up being E.J. Encinosa, who's the power arm out of last year's bullpen, and Chuck Gissels, the guy who's the big recruit for Maryland, who's working to their weekend rotation. But, you know, you can move Encinosa into the rotation when you have Danny Miranda at the back of the bullpen. And to me, the advantage of the back of the bullpen still goes to Miami in that series with North Carolina because Danny Miranda is very consistent. He's been pretty good for 2 years now, that Miami bullpen. So that's a series where it seems like the winner of that series has a very good shot at being that fourth ACC team that's going to host a regional, Virginia, Georgia Tech, and then probably Florida State, although the Seminoles have fallen back a little bit here. And do you read it that way? Or maybe it's the inside track to be the third regional host out of the ACC?
Yeah, I mean, I still think North Carolina, like you said, I think they're still in very good shape to host a regional and still certainly in the national seed discussion. I mean, I don't think one weekend can undo, 30-5 and a series win at Florida State. For me, I mean, I look at Miami's resume, and they don't have a series win yet against a likely regional team. I mean, their best series win is a sweep against NC State, which is a very much a fringe regional team right now, even after this weekend. So for me, Miami has a lot more work to do. But this weekend would certainly change things a little bit. I think you could maybe put Miami back into position to host. I mean, right now I think they're kind of competing with Stetson for a hosting spot, and Stetson has a much better record against the top 50. You know, I think there's something like 12-2 against the top 100, whereas I mean Miami is like 0-6 against the top 25. So
wow,
there's some work for Miami to do.
No doubt, Aaron. Let's move on to the Big 12 conference because it seems like there's started to be a little bit of a shift in the Big 12. One of the biggest series of the weekend was the Bedlam series, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Really about as good of a rivalry series as there is in the country. I think South Carolina and Clemson have maybe passed it a little bit just because South Carolina won a national title, and both teams have been a little bit higher profile nationally of late than Oklahoma and Oklahoma State have. But, you know, obviously the Sooners were in Omaha last year. The Cowboys, you know, were last place in the Big 12 last year, but they're starting to stir up the echoes of past Cowboys teams. And then they go and win the Bedlam series this weekend. And Oklahoma State now with a pretty gaudy record of 27-9, overall record just as good as anyone in the Big 12, same record as Texas, moving up in our rankings to number 16. And at 10-5, they're only one game back of Texas and Texas A&M, which are both top 10 teams in our rankings. Let's talk a little bit about the Cowboys. I think we touched on them last weekend, Aaron, but what's got the Cowboys in position to get back into regional play number one and you know, to have them win that series for the first time in 3 years against the Oklahoma, their big rival?
You know, they did it with their bats this weekend. You know, it's been pitching for them has, I think, been the key to their resurgence. They're much better on the mound than they had been the last 2 years. You know, the rotation with Brad Probst and Mike Strong and to a lesser extent Andrew Haney has been pretty strong. I like their bullpen a lot. You know, I mean, they've got some power arms back there. Chris Marlowe has been outstanding for them. He's shown really good stuff. You know, he's got one of the best curveballs probably in college baseball. And he can run his fastball up in the mid-90s. And he shut down Oklahoma in Friday's win. And they've got Randy McCurry back there now. I mean, that's a nice 1-2 punch. So I think they've got a good bullpen and good starting pitching. But this weekend, they hit. You know, they really did. Zach Johnson's come on pretty strong for them. They've got a bunch of, you know, nice veteran college guys like Johnson and Davis Durant. And Mark Ginthers has had a good year for them, and Dane Phillips. All these guys have a little bit of pop, you know. I mean, it's this team has 26 home runs. That's a decent amount for college baseball nowadays. So, you know, Oklahoma State is for real. They're certainly a regional team, and right now I think they've probably passed Oklahoma on the pecking order to host a regional.
Sure seems that way. And I guess for Oklahoma, Aaron, you expressed this worry earlier in the year when Ryan Duke was kind of struggling out of their bullpen, and that after Michael Rocha, who didn't last past the fifth inning, their pitching was starting to look a little suspect. They've moved Bobby Shore kind of into a middle relief role, and Birch Smith, their big recruit, no longer in the weekend rotation. He's out of the bullpen.
No, he did actually pitch. He started Saturday.
Who was it who relieved on Sunday, on Friday then for them? Was that him? I thought that he relieved on Friday. That was Bobby Shore
on Friday.
Shore who relieved both Friday and Sunday. I got their names mixed up. But they seem like their pitching is just a little unsettled, and to blow that lead. I think it's kind of tells you a little bit about this series. First of all, you had 25,000 people in attendance for the weekend. Second of all, that you had such swings on the final game with a 7-run eighth for Oklahoma State, and then Oklahoma battling right back. But it seems like Oklahoma, you mentioned, out of the Big 12 teams, they're the least pitching in defense out of those teams. And now you look at their series for the year, they're 4-3-1. They've won four series, but they've lost three and have another. They split with two games with Missouri. Oklahoma just hasn't quite been as good as we thought they'd be this year. It seems like that's because they're not necessarily built for the bats.
Yeah, I mean, coming into the year, I wondered about that a little bit, you know, because they, like you said, I mean, they seem like a team that's more geared toward offense than pitching and defense. And, you know, they've pitched well at times. I mean, Michael Rocha has generally pitched very well all
right.
Year. He did not pitch great this past weekend. But, you know, and they've gotten flashes from Birch Smith. He's been he certainly is great stuff. You know, his stuff has been as good as advertised, and he's trying to still make the adjustment, I think, to D1, but he's done pretty well. It's a decent 1-2 punch, and then they've just had some instability there with some other roles. Like you said, moving Bobby Shore around, moving Dylan Overton to different spots. He started on Sunday. I think it's actually encouraging that Shore seemed to pitch better this weekend. I mean, in both those games, I think he allowed a total of 2 runs over 6 2/3. That's not bad. You know, they need him. He's a key guy for them. You talk to scouts in that area, and they'll tell you that they expected Oklahoma to maybe be the best team in the league coming into the year. And you know, they've been a little disappointing. They haven't put all together yet. They blew a big lead on Sunday. You know, they allowed 7 runs in the 8th inning. That really speaks to the bullpen issues that you're talking about. Ryan Duke was really the guy who got hit hard there. So it sounds like they just don't have a shutdown guy at the back of the bullpen the way that Oklahoma State does with Marlowe. Although Marlowe got hit on Sunday too.
Right. So. Yeah. Marlowe's got crazy numbers. I mean, he talked about 57 strikeouts in 34 innings. But you know, personal cheese ball of mine, Andrew Hegg got the win in that game out of the bullpen. Only his 7th appearance of the year. But I just think I'm going to guess that Andrew Hegg at Duquesne in his first 3 years or in the Jayhawk League didn't experience anything like Sunday Bedlam series game where you come in and you're coming in to pitch the 10th inning. Oklahoma's put up 5 runs in the last 2 innings to tie this game at 10 apiece, and you're asked to go out there and shut things down. And to Andrew Heck's credit, he did it. But I don't think he got any preparation for that in the Atlantic 10 Conference. Put it that way.
And you know, the problem, I guess, the concern with Marlowe is that I've heard is he's not terribly physical, and that maybe he doesn't bounce back very well. And you know, he threw three-plus innings, I think, on Friday. Maybe coming back on Sunday, he just wasn't prepared for that. So that's might be a little bit of a concern for Oklahoma State. But that's why it's good that they've got Andrew Heck, they've got Randy McCurry and Gabe Widener back there.
Right.
They've got more options than Oklahoma has.
And the rest of the Big 12, Aaron, I still think Oklahoma is the number 4 team as far as getting a regional bid. But is there who's in the catbird seat for a 5th regional bid from the Big 12? Is it Nebraska? Is it Texas Tech? Because boy, Baylor scuffling, barely over 500. K-State struggling in the league. Kansas overall resume not that hot, barely 500. Is this a league that's in danger of only having 4 regional teams?
It might be. I still suspect it'll get a 5th, and I think it'll be Baylor still, because I think their RPI is in pretty good shape. But boy, I mean, they're, like you said, they're 20-17 overall. They've been very inconsistent up and down. You know, they've lost now 3 straight weekend series. Tough team to get a read on. I mean, again, you talk about a team like Oklahoma that's been a little disappointing. Baylor's been more than just a little disappointing, because I thought that this was a year where they could maybe put it together a little bit. But once again, they're disappointing.
I think the thing with Baylor is that it sounded like they were an athletic team, a good pitching team with athleticism that we thought that should translate to some success in a pitching and defense-oriented season. And instead, they just keep losing series. They've lost conference series at Texas Tech, at Kansas, home to Texas, now Texas A&M. The good thing for them is now they get Missouri. They better sweep. They better kick the Tigers while the Tigers are down. But it does not get easier for them. They finish the season at Nebraska, at Oklahoma State, home to Oklahoma. That's not looking good for the Bears. Talking about Nebraska, Aaron, you're headed out to Nebraska later this afternoon. You'll be flying out to Omaha, debut of the new TD Ameritrade Stadium. You'll be there for Nebraska and Creighton. Let's talk about those two teams. Nebraska, obviously only 4-7, I believe, in Big 12 play. Nebraska seems like it's got an outside shot at being that 5th regional team. Maybe it's not an outside shot. Maybe it's a good shot. Where do you rate Nebraska's chances? And I don't know if you know who you're going to see midweek there and when Nebraska matches up with Creighton, but what are you looking for Nebraska in that game and the rest of the season?
Well, you know, Nebraska is another one of those teams that has been a little bit up and down. There's been a lot of that going around.
Yeah.
That's another thing. I think it's harder maybe to be consistent with these new bats that people are still adjusting to. That's why it's so impressive that Virginia's 36-3. But
agreed.
That's another aside. But yeah, no. I mean, I think Nebraska. I still think the strength of this team is its pitching. You know, and that's the kind of identity that they have. And That's why when they've lost series, they lost to Oklahoma State. They gave up a lot of runs, and that was a little bit of a concern. They lost series to Texas Tech. They gave up 10 runs on Saturday. That to me is a little bit of a surprise. I mean, I'm not sure how good Nebraska is at this point. I think the remaining schedule is very difficult with Oklahoma, Baylor, Texas, and then Texas A&M the next 4 weeks. My gut says it's probably not going to wind up as a regional team like we thought it would be heading into the year.
Yeah, and it looks like you're going to get Tyler Niederklein, which is a great name, sophomore right-hander. He's their midweek guy. He's been pretty steady there. But if you're watching that game is on TV on CBS College.
Yeah.
I guess actually it's now called the CBS Sports Network. You're going to look for Kyrie Cooper, who plays football there. Was a fifth-round pick at a high school by the Angels. He's an interesting – if you're a prospect watcher, Kyrie Cooper is interesting to watch. But Cody Ash is the best player there. I mean, this is a guy who's – I don't know that he's Alex Gordon, which kudos to Alex Gordon, by the way, off to a great start in the big leagues. Hopefully, finally figuring things out at the big league level, because I think we'd like to see good things for Alex Gordon. But Cody Ash, Aaron, is slugging .660. He's got 18 doubles and 9 home runs. Tell us a little bit about Cody Ash. It seems like he's the guy who makes his offense go for Nebraska.
Yeah, Ash, he's a good player, and he's a good prospect, too. He was pretty high on our Northwoods League list last year. He's got legit power, not just because he has 9 home runs. I mean, he showed some power with wood bats last year too in the Northwoods. He's a corner infielder who can hit and has power potential, and I think he's got a chance to go. He's a top 5 rounds guy, I think, for sure. He's legit. So Nebraska. The thing I'm worried about tomorrow night, John, is the weather. The forecast looks very dicey with some rain in the mix. So I hope we
Don't
get that game
that.
In.
Don't
I know.
Say that.
I know it's awful.
That's brutal. Come on now, we need that game to get played, or else this brilliant idea of shipping you halfway across the country doesn't work.
Yeah.
Especially because if you get rained out and go to the Drover, man, I'm going to be really mad. That's really going to stink. But like you said, I mean, he was in the Northwoods League All-Star game last year. Where do we rank him in our in that list? And it is Ashy, as you pronounce it. He was the number 4 prospect in the Northwoods League. So that's pretty good. And in Creighton... the Blue Jays, we did not rank the Blue Jays this week, but an impressive start for Creighton in the Missouri Valley Conference, going on the road to win series at Illinois State and Indiana State. Illinois State kind of was the favorite in the league coming into the year. They still have to go to Wichita. But talk a little bit about Creighton, just how good is Creighton? Do we have a good feel for how good the Blue Jays are, and what's been their strength this year?
It's hard to know quite how good they are because they haven't played a very strong schedule. They're 26-7, and we like that consistency. But their non-conference was soft. Maybe some of the teams that you expected would be good on their schedule have not been really. New Mexico has struggled. Arkansas State is below .500. Portland, we thought was going to be a good series. They're 12-20 now, so we don't – until you play somebody who's really good, it's hard to know how good Creighton is. But I do know this. They can pick it, and that's what they do. That's the identity of this program is year in, year out, they're one of the best defensive teams in college baseball, and they're fielding at a .980 clip this year once again. So, they're a very good defensive team. They don't beat themselves. They're so well coached. You know how much regard we have for Ed Service and his staff over there.
No doubt.
And they have a power arm guy on Friday in Ty Block. So that's a good place to start.
It is a good place to start, and it does leave the people in Omaha. It's 42 degrees in Omaha as we record this. So you're headed into some weather that's not Southern California. Forget the gray. You're headed into the gloaming almost. So good luck. I hope the weather holds up for you. Last thing I want to talk about in the podcast and with our College Top 25, Aaron, was a little bit of draft stuff, just because you saw two of the top college pitchers in the country coming into the year in Matt Perk and Trevor Bauer. It's all on your Twitter feed if people want to go back and read it, at Aaron Fitt on Twitter. But kind of compare and contrast a little bit of Bauer and Perk. I mean, Matt Perk is how you draw it up. I mean, their contrast could not be more different. The tall left-hander. I don't know if you'd say a great pitcher's build because he's very skinny and a little bit of a low slot. He's always been a low slot guy. But here's a Matt Perk, a guy who, first-round pick at a high school. Trevor Bauer doesn't even go through the draft at a high school. Skips graduates a semester early so he can enroll early at UCLA. So he's never even been through the draft. A guy, Matt Perk, who's really, I think it's fair to say, has been handled with care this year. He's been tight pitch counts, tightly regulated pitching outings, and pitching at TCU. You know, their schedule, they're all over the country in their conference just by nature, and plays pitching against some pretty good teams. UCLA, their schedule actually hasn't been that great, even in the Pac-10, and they generally have stuck to Southern California, even when they play on the road. Matt Perk is pitching like 85 to 100 pitches a game. Trevor Bauer doesn't get going until he gets to 85 or 100 pitches a game. Bauer's like, 4 to 6 inches shorter than Perk. Completely different deliveries. I think Matt Perk is the more conventional pick, but Trevor Bauer is just lapping him this year, isn't he?
He's not even close. You know, I mean, Trevor Bauer, I really believe is going to go in the top five picks this draft. And Matt Perk, you know, at this point, if the draft were today, he's not a first rounder because he didn't look good this weekend. And, he came out strong. He was 90-91 in the first, touched the 92 or 93 in the second, and you thought maybe he's starting to find his groove a little bit here. And then just a precipitous drop-off for no apparent reason in the third. He came out sitting 88 in the third inning, and then in the fourth he was down to 84 to 86. The slider, which was very good the first two innings when he got five strikeouts, became slurvy, and, his stuff just wasn't as good. He competed. Matt Perk always competes, but there's red flags. And a lot of people, scouts, you ask them what's going on with this guy, they scratch their heads and they can only speculate that he's got to be hurt. And TCU says they've had the arm checked out. Everybody's looked at it. There's nothing structural that they can find. It's just a dead arm deal. Whatever it is, he's not going to be cheap to sign. I mean, he turned down a pretty significant offer at a high school, as we all know.
Yeah, he turned down slot is what he ended up turning down, $2.3
million. Right.
Yeah, so he turned that down and is believed, if Nolan Ryan is to be believed, and I think he is, they had an agreement for $6 million that MLB did not approve. So that's a pretty good source for that, in my mind. I've seen people question us writing that. Our source is Nolan Ryan, and it wasn't an exclusive. It's, he was talking to season ticket holders. But I think the biggest concerns for me with Perk are, A, like you wrote about that, you wrote about the velocity decreasing. That's usually an arm speed thing. It seems like he's lost a little arm speed. And when the velocity decreases over the course of innings, that's usually a fatigue thing. And like you talked about, he dropped his arm slot. That happens when you aren't strong enough to maintain your mechanics. And it seems like he just doesn't have the strength in his arm this year for whatever reason. And potential, one possible and I believe plausible explanation for that is, as you wrote on the blog, on the college blog, he didn't pitch last summer and he didn't throw in the fall. It just seems like he's still being built up, which is, something of a concern. Whereas Trevor Bauer, I think people think that he's overworked. I mean, we've both written about that in the chat or on Twitter, how we don't necessarily agree with that. But contrast that a little bit. I mean, what are you hearing about the way people – are any scouts concerned about the way Trevor Bauer's being used? Have you heard any of that? I mean, or is that just internet, rumor-mongering? Or not rumor-mongering, but just fear-mongering, really.
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. you talk to the scouts about him, and I don't think there's a lot of concern about it. I really don't. I mean, this guy's stock is on the rise. Nobody's sitting there saying, oh, my God, he's throwing 130 pitches once a week. I mean, pitchers are different, and I think scouts, the smart ones, recognize that. He was really good this week. I mean, he wasn't even at his best, but he was still 91-93 in the ninth inning. I saw him touch a 94-95 in the middle innings, but boy, the curveball was great. I mean, it's one of the best curveballs I think in college baseball. It's a great pitch that he has a tremendous feel for. He's got the slider, he's got the split, the changeup, and now he's got the reverse slider that he'll throw sometimes. It's a great package. He's an incredible competitor. He's going to go high in this draft. I really don't think he'll get out of the top 10, and I think he's got a chance to go in the top 5.
His season, Aaron, dwarfs the season of his own teammate, Gerrit Cole. I mean, he's having a better season, he's not a better prospect necessarily. I don't think he's much worse of a prospect. I think he's closer to Gerrit Cole than Gerrit Cole is to Steven Strasburg or Mark Pryor or David Price, personally. I'm not taking anything away from Gerrit Cole. But, you know, Gerrit Cole just seems like he's prone to having this inning here or there where things just don't go right for him. Yeah. Trevor Bauer, it seems like he always has a strikeout in his back pocket when he needs it. And maybe that's just a function of better command and a deeper repertoire. But the one other concern I wanted to bring up, where the stats tell a little bit of the story with Matt Perk. And Matt Perk hit 10 batters last year in 116 games. He's hit 8 already this year. And you talked to a scout who talked about his inability to command the fastball glove side, which would be inside to right-handed hitters, correct?
That's right.
I mean, and what was the kind of the gist behind that? Because that seems like that's not a now concern. That's a long-term concern.
Yeah. That's more of a bigger picture concern. And he thinks, the scout I talked to said it is because of his delivery. He doesn't think it allows him to command to that glove side. And, you know, I was looking for that specifically on Saturday, and he actually came out of the gates and seemed like he was spotting his fastball okay over the inner half. Those first two innings, we looked okay. I mean, he was hitting his spots. He was pitching inside. He's getting the corner. He even had a strikeout where he froze a guy, the San Diego State's cleanup hitter, Chris Wilson, on a fastball right over that inside part of the plate. But after that, I mean, it wasn't there, you know. So I don't know. He's a mystery right now. But the other guy I saw this weekend, I mean, it was a great weekend. I saw Tyler Anderson for Oregon on Friday.
Yeah, another left-hander this draft has a lot of good college left-handers, and that's two of them, Perk and Anderson, and obviously Jed Bradley at Georgia Tech and Danny Hulton at Virginia. The other guys have gotten a lot of attention this year.
And Anderson's going to, I think, go in the first round too. I mean, he was very good this weekend. Went the distance, you know, complete game, 88-91. Good slider, good curveball, good changeup. And he actually didn't quite go the distance. He left in the ninth inning. I should correct myself. But, you know, people like that guy a lot. He's got some deception to him, and he competes as well. And there are fewer question marks with him than there are with Matt Perk right now.
How did Andrew Triggs look in that game? Did he look okay?
You know, okay? He competed. I mean, the book on Triggs is he comes out very strong and then his stuff, he doesn't sustain it. You know, he just he's more of a shorter stints guy, I think. But he, you know, whenever Oregon threatened, he seemed like he came up with a good pitch. He got some strikeouts with the kind of slurve that he throws. He was okay.
And yet USC wins that series. The Beavers, the Oregon Ducks. They're going the opposite direction of the Beavers. Oregon is scuffling at 2-7, I believe, in the Pac-10. And how about USC? Is any chance that Frank Cruz is going to get that job full time? They're fifth in the league. To me, that shouldn't be the barometer. You know, USC should aim for higher than fifth in the league, and I don't see any way that they go fifth better than fifth in the league, and they're under 500 overall. But any talk at all that he's Frank Cruz is earning a shot at keeping that job full time at USC?
Yeah, there is. You know, I mean, people like him there. He's done a good job making those guys play hard. And, you know, I think he's certainly going to get a fair shot at that job. It'll be tough, I think, if they do finish below 500 overall, which right now they're 15-20 and they're in the Pac-10. So it's not going to be easy to get back to 500. But, you know, that said, they won series last two weekends that I expected them to lose. So they're playing well right now. And, you know, I think Frank Cruz will get a shot at that job. I do expect them, though, to try to make a big splash with a big name.
Going to be fascinating to watch, Aaron. We've gone long on the podcast. We probably better wrap up, unless there was something that you wanted to touch base on before we wrap up.
Now, that'll do it for me, John.
I think that'll do it as well. I did want to mention briefly before we go that we did have Kurt Stimson, who commented on our Facebook page. I love Virginia, but I think South Carolina gets the nod. He would have gone South Carolina, Virginia, Vanderbilt, Florida. I think he forgot about the Beavers in there, which we did not. We ranked Oregon State. But Kurt commenting on Facebook, he thought Virginia should have been number one. And he thought South Carolina should have been number one. And I'm sure you'll hear from people like-minded from Kurt in today's Defend the Poll chat, Aaron. So
that's going to be a treat.
Enjoy that. Have a safe flight to Omaha, and I hope the weather holds up for you.
Thank you, John.
All right, for Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next Monday on the Baseball America College Podcast. Until then, so long, everybody.